Today's image that's projected on the screens here is the famous painting by Caravaggio depicting the formerly doubting Thomas placing his finger in Jesus' side. Now for me, the most remarkable quality of this image is that it brings your eyes to focus in on Jesus' body, on the corporal nature of the risen Jesus. You know, this Italian Baroque artist, Caravaggio, was the master of chiaroscuro. Chiaroscuro was the use of light and shadow in order to bring about this contrast and a dramatic effect, right? And looking closely at the wound of Jesus' side, he captures the moment so skillfully that you yourself can feel that tender flesh of Jesus' side, as if St. Thomas's finger was your finger. In the initial appearances, the resurrection appearances of Jesus to his disciples, there's obviously something that he wants to make very clear, and that it is really him that stands before them. The way he's revealing to his disciples that he is alive is not some spiritual manifestation that lets his disciples know, yes, he's alive, but in some faraway place that's in another dimension. No, he wants to let them know that he is alive in the flesh right before their very eyes. We've seen that in the gospel readings we've had during this whole first week of Easter. We've seen that because in the recounting of one of the resurrection appearances in the Gospel of Luke, just this past Thursday, the disciples are utterly stupefied. In fact, Luke said that, quote, they were startled and terrified and thought they were seeing what? A ghost. They thought they were seeing a ghost. So what does Jesus tell them? As usual, he first tries to calm them down. One of the most oft-repeated phrases that Jesus says is, be not afraid. It is I. Do not fear. And we saw in today's gospel the very first thing. What did he say the very first thing to the disciples when he saw them? Peace be with you. Good, you're listening. Shalom. And he says shalom not once, not twice, but three times in this one passage. He wants us to receive his peace, that no matter the confusion and the chaos that humanity is causing, all is under control whenever he is present. Right? We oftentimes need to realize that because we got our own confusion and chaos going on. For them, it was the chaos and confusion of what's going to happen next. Are they going to come after us? That's why they were all locked up in that upper room together. Are they going to take us next? And so, in Luke's account, the first thing Jesus tells them is what? Why are you troubled? And why do questions arise in your hearts? It's as if he's saying, don't you realize it's me? Why do you doubt? Why do you question? Even the worst that humanity can throw at me, I have conquered. So there's nothing to fear. And we saw in the second reading, who is the one that is the conqueror, the victor over the world? It is the one who has faith in Jesus Christ. And then what happens? He wants to assure them. Jesus wants to assure them that it's really him. So Jesus says in the Lucan account, look at my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Touch me and see, because a ghost doesn't have flesh and bones as you can see I have. And what did he do in John's account of his first appearance? The one that we just read. Jesus came and stood in their midst, said to them, peace be with you. And we had said this, he showed them, what? His hands and his side. The disciples rejoiced when they saw the Lord. Jesus said to them again, peace be with you. So after saying peace be with you, the first thing Jesus did was to show them his hands and his side, the wounds of his crucifixion. That in itself is profound, brothers and sisters, that in the resurrected and glorified body of Jesus, he retains the wounds that were afflicted upon him. A sign of his union with us, a sign of his complete solidarity with you and me in our woundedness. Because you'd think if he was going to be all healed up, there wouldn't be any wounds left. But as a sign of that you and I are part of his mystical body, he retains the wounds. That's a homily in itself. I'm not going to go any further on that point. But the first thing that Jesus does is to show his hands and his side, revealing to us that it's really him and not some ghost. And what is the first thing that he does the following Sunday with Thomas? It says there, Jesus stood in their midst and said, "Peace be with you," once again. Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Bring your hand and put it into my side. And do not be unbelieving, but believe." There are a lot of folks who can believe in a spiritual afterlife. But there are many that cannot get their minds around the idea that a glorified body accompanies that spirit. So the central point I want to leave with you is Jesus teaching us about the resurrection of the body as well, not just the soul. And he does that through his own bodily resurrection and his emphasis that it is really him in the flesh. Allow me to give a little catechesis on the resurrection of the body, beginning with paragraph 996 of the catechism. It quotes first to St. Augustine, who said, "On no point does the Christian faith encounter more opposition than on the resurrection of the body." And then the catechism continues, "It is very commonly accepted that the life of the human person continues in a spiritual fashion after death. But how can we believe," poses the question, "how can we believe that this body, so clearly mortal, could rise to everlasting life?" Seems preposterous, doesn't it? So in answering that question, the church speaks about what happens when we die. Paragraph 997. "In death, the separation of the soul from the body," that's what death is, right? When the soul, the immaterial part of ourselves, separates from the body, "the human body decays and the soul goes to meet God while awaiting its reunion with its glorified body." So notice that our current body will decay, you know, from dust to dust, right? But the soul, the immaterial part of us, hopefully prepares to meet God. But at the consummation of time, when all is said and done, when there are going to be new heavens and a new earth, we will be reunited with this body of ours in a glorified fashion, in a way that we probably wouldn't even recognize our own selves. Remember how in Wednesday's gospel, the two disciples, they were walking to Emmaus, and Jesus approaches them. Didn't even recognize Jesus. And he's explaining all the scriptures to them, saying, "Oh, how slow you are to believe," etc. And as we heard in last, when did they finally recognize him? In the breaking of the bread, right? In the Eucharist. And as we heard in last Sunday's morning gospel, St. Mary Magdalene thought Jesus was what? A gardener. Thought it was a gardener at first until he said her name, Mary. And it's at that point that she felt completely known, right? She knew that it was him. So the catechism continues. "God in his almighty power will definitively grant incorruptible life to our bodies by reuniting them with our souls through the power of Jesus' resurrection. So our earthly bodies are corruptible, but God will grant us incorruptible bodies." Remember how Jesus was transfigured before Peter, James, and John on the Mount of Transfiguration? So then the catechism asks, how will the dead rise? And the church addresses the question of what kind of body we will have. Quote, "Christ is raised with his own body, so in him all of them will rise again with their own bodies, which they now bear. But Christ will change our lowly body to be like his glorious body into a spiritual body. So because we're baptized into Christ's body, these poor lowly bodies of ours will be changed, thank God. Father Chaz won't have follically challenged, overweight, diabetic body with high blood pressure, right? No, these lowly bodies of ours will be changed after the pattern of Jesus' glorious body. A spiritual body which appears to be able to translocate, because Jesus can sneak up on his disciples in a totally closed and locked room, right? Now that'll be a cool power to have. Then the catechism recognizes that you'll still have people asking more questions about the nature of our glorified body. And to that, it quotes the ever subtle St. Paul and what he said to the Corinthians. "You foolish man, what you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And what you sow is not the body which is to be, but a bare kernel. What is sown is perishable, what is raised is imperishable. The dead will be raised imperishable. For this perishable nature must put on the imperishable, and this mortal nature must put on immortality. In other words, St. Paul is saying that our present earthly bodies are perishable. They will corrupt. The only part of our bodies that we will retain is that bare kernel, as he calls it, that makes it our body, makes our body our own and not another's. You can illustrate that even now with the imperfect analogy of our present body. You know, all the cells that make up our body right now and the skin that covers it all have a temporary life cycle, right? The cells will be replaced. My present skin will slough off and the skin will take its place. I'm not exactly how, maybe you can ask Dr. Doan back there after Mass, how long does it take for our bodies to completely renew ourselves so that it's not the same material reality that we had however long ago. But even when that time comes, when all the cells and skin that I have now are replaced completely with new ones, do I still have my one and the same body? Can I still call it my one and the same body, even if none of the material realities that were there before are present now? Yes, of course. I still have my one and the same body. And so, even if we get all new material stuff that's incorruptible, imperishable, translocatable, not only in this earthly dimension of space and time, but across dimensions. This is maybe why we're so obsessed with superheroes, because we know we're made for this, right? There is still, even if we have all that new material stuff, imperishable, incorruptible, translocatable, across dimensions, there is still that bare kernel that we retain that makes it our body and not another's. So going back to the catechism, this mystery of our glorified spiritual body, quote, exceeds our imagination and understanding. So if you've got body issues now, right now, don't worry about it, because we'll all appear in heaven with a makeover that is going to make any living human being now pale in comparison, right? And moreover, because we're not going to be vain in heaven, we'll be supremely happy because we'll be exactly who we were created to be. As we are about to enter into the liturgy of the Eucharist, I want to quote St. Irenaeus, who offers us the Eucharist as an analogy as it relates to the resurrection of the body. The early church father said this: our participation in the Eucharist already gives us a foretaste of Christ's transfiguration of our bodies. Just as bread that comes from the earth, after God's blessing has been invoked upon it, is no longer ordinary bread, but Eucharist, formed of two things, the one earthly and the other heavenly. So too, our bodies, which partake of the Eucharist, are no longer corruptible, but possesses the hope of resurrection. Nourished with his body in the Eucharist, we already belong to the body of Christ. When we rise on the last day, we also will appear with him in glory. Unquote. And then the Catechism concludes this entire section on the resurrection of the body with St. Paul's words to the Corinthians. And that's what I'll close with today. And by the way, if you get a chance to see Paul the Apostle of Christ, go see it. It's not showing here anymore. It ended. It's still showing in Ann Arbor, though. But St. Paul said this: the body is meant for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. And God raised the Lord, and will also raise us up by his power. Do you not know that your bodies are members of Christ? You are not your own. So glorify God in your body.